नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
So we will be reading only one page, and the middle of the page we have this verse number 13. Please respond.
Dehi nosmin yatha dehe
Dehi nosmin yatha dehe
Kaumaram yavanam jara
Kaumaram yavanam jara
Tatha dehantara praptir
Tatha dehantara praptir
Dhirastatrana muhyati
Dhirastatrana muhyati.
As the embodied soul continuously passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. Right at the outset of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Sri Krishna enlightens Arjuna about his real identity. We saw in the earlier chapter as well as the earlier verses how Arjuna was refusing to fight. This is one of the most important verses of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna speaks here to Arjuna while he enlightens him about what his real identity is. So we would like to go through an exercise. I would request all of you, a practical exercise, to close your eyes and contemplate for a few minutes whatever I would speak. Then you can get a practical understanding of this verse. At the current moment, try to understand the body that you have. Do you know how many number of hairs you have on your head? You do not know. When you put food in the mouth, do you know how that food goes into the stomach and how it gets separated as blood or the useful material and useless material? Am I doing that? No. Similarly, do you know the growth rate of nails? How fastly the nails grow in your body? You don't know. So I can take any part of my body, namely the hand or the leg or the knees or the face or any part. My knowledge about this body is very, very limited. So in the current moment, although I am looking at my own body, I do not even know about the happenings of my body. All of a sudden a rash comes at one place and it pains, and then all of a sudden it develops into a boil and gives me acute pain, and afterwards it goes away automatically. So I have no control over it. So such things happen in our body time to time, the current moment. Looking towards our past, if you think back, when you were 15 years old, or when you are 10 years old or 12 years old, and try to think about yourself, how you were, what kind of dress you wore, what kind of hairstyle you had, what kind of friends you had, and what incidents happened in your life. You can think about them deeply. Suddenly you will remember some of them, if not everything. You can even think back more deeply when you were 5 years old, when you just started going to school, how you made friendship with new people, how you behaved in your school. And if you even go back further in time, you can think of the time when you are crawling on the ground, or even a little back in the womb of the mother in a crouched position, like a arched bow, sitting in the womb of the mother in a very precarious condition. And in the same way, as we were going backwards in the past, we can also go in time in future scale. Just like now, all of us are at a particular age. Think of some 30, 40 years from now. What do you think your body will be? You can think of, there will be more wrinkles in the body. And I can easily see some 10 years ago how my body was and now how my body is. I can easily see how things have changed, details have changed. People often tell you, this person has changed so much. He's grown up or so much. And people sometimes say, I cannot even recognize you. You've changed so much. You take your own photograph of your school days and see the photos. You can't believe that you were so small. Similarly, in future, if you see, a time will come and wrinkles will come in our body, eyes will go into the socket, and ears can't hear so well. Probably we'll need the help of a crutch or some stick in hand, and the hair may turn white, and we may have rheumatic arthritis pain and things like that. So many things. But you will see one thing. If you see the present or the past or the future, in all these times, you will be able to see yourself as a witness observing all these activities. It is not difficult. It is very easy. You say, I was a small boy. Now I am a young person. I will become old, we say. So we can see in all these situations, there is a silent witness in the ourselves, watching all these changes happening in our life. So that witness is the soul, Atma, or Atman, that Krishna is speaking about here. This is one of the secrets that Krishna reveals in Bhagavad Gita for the benefit of everyone. In fact, real knowledge begins from here only. Otherwise, we go to the colleges, we go to schools, we study about, history, we study geography, we study science, we study about the world around us. All this is called as Jadavidya. The Jadavidya may be of some help to us, but it doesn't satisfy a person no matter how much knowledge one grasps. There are people who have done doctorate degrees from foreign universities, but still they have not found the end of life. They don't know where happiness is lying. They have searched all around the world. Happiness can begin only when one acquires this knowledge of soul. One has to understand, I am not the body, I am the soul. I am the witness in this body. Body is changing, as Krishna says here. Kaumaram, Yavanam, Jaram. From childhood to youth, youth to old age, body goes on changing. But the Atma, the soul in the body, he never changes. And he is the real driver of the body. Often in the modern times, educated people tend to think that a living being is born at the time of birth, and then at the time of death, everything is finished. People think like that. There is nothing more to do in life. So that's why they use the word dead end. Dead end means everything ends there. They think like that. They think that life is simply but a combination of chemicals. But the Shastras say, of course this body is a machine, it's a combination of chemicals. But this chemical combination, how can it run? How can this machine act without a prime mover, without somebody moving it? What is moving this body? Just like an aeroplane may be standing in the airport for maybe a million years. It cannot move. Sometimes you find a huge aeroplane standing in the airport, and then you find one pilot is walking. He goes and he climbs up to the top, and then aeroplane starts moving and starts flying. You've seen that? So the tiny spirit soul, he is actually the mover of the aeroplane. Similarly, in every body, there is this Atman or the spirit soul. Sometimes you open a old book, you find a small insect, moving like this. You've seen? When you open a old book, what do you call that?
Silverfish
is bigger actually. Something even more smaller than that. Where it's like a dot. You've seen that? It's like a dot moving. So in that body of that small insect also, there is a soul. And in the body of the huge whale, is like, it lives for 300 years and huge in size. So the same soul is present. That's why Krishna later will say, Ascharyavat pasyati kaschidenam Ascharyavat badati tataiva chanyahan Ascharyavak chayanam annyashranoti Shudva apiyena vedana chayiva kaschid. He's saying some people see the soul as amazing. How this tiny soul can occupy a tiny insect's body, at the same time can occupy a huge whale's body or an elephant's body. or a huge banyan tree's body. The same soul is the operating principle. Once the operator is there, then the body can move. Sometimes you have seen this bulldozer, it looks like a big hand, you know, goes in the ground like this, it turns like this, you know, takes like this and puts on the lorry, you know. Again it goes down and turns like this. You have seen that? All of you have seen it?
Yes.
So from distance if you see, it looks like some big rakshasa has come there, you know. How is this happening, you know, some sound is coming, some gears are moving. But then behind that you will find there is a driver. That cabin is a very small cabin. The driver is moving everything. Similarly, the huge bodies and the small bodies are all moved by whom? The driver, the spirit soul. Without him, body cannot function. Shastras clearly say that. Otherwise, why your dead body in which all the same chemicals are present, why can't such a dead body function? In Russia, there was a young boy who was about to join the army. So in army, like I had gone also for Indian Air Force. I wanted to become a pilot officer in South Selection Board in Bangalore. So some 120 people had come. They went on screening. Finally, they screened four of us. So they chose us for pilot officers. We were about to join. So they conducted around 16 types of medical tests. Practically, they rip your whole body apart and check everything. Top to bottom, tip of the head, tip of the toe. They check everything in the body. Check your eyesight, this, cardiac, everything. So out of three of us, two of them got rejected. Because one had cardiac trouble and things like that. So only two of us were chosen for that. Of course, later on my parents didn't permit me because they wanted a oath, you know, that if something happens to your son, we are not responsible or something like that. So it's a very difficult thing to join in defense. It's not an easy thing. Lot of tests are conducted. So similarly in Russia also, one boy got selected, screened. Finally, he was passed in all the medical tests. So for me, medical test took about 13 days or 14 days. It took a long time. So this boy also, they had a test like that for him. And after all the tests were over, he was certified. Yes, now he can join our defense. And that very same night, this boy died. And the next day morning, the doctors were horrified. Because if somebody is certified to be medically all right, and if he dies in such a young age, he was just about in range of 20 to 25. The doctors took his body to the lab and they dissected his body and they checked everything postmortem as they do. There was not a single defect in the body. Everything was perfect. Whatever chemicals are needed, chemicals were there. All the bodily parts were quite normal. So now they didn't know why this person couldn't function. What happened to him? Why? It's the same healthy looking body. But something is missing in the body. Why? What is missing in that body? That is very important. So Krishna says here that missing element is the soul. When soul leaves the body, then the body is termed to be dead. Very simple definition. Without the soul, the body cannot function. So how can we understand that the soul is present in the body? Not very difficult. When the soul is present, you will see that the body undergoes six changes. Like you see the body, as soon as it is born, it grows. The body can change. You will see that it is changing from childhood to youth, youth to old age. The change can take place only when there is soul present. And also it will produce some byproducts like children, and then it decays and then dies. So it undergoes six changes. Birth, growth, maintenance, production of byproducts, decay and death, like that. Now you will not see any dead matter changing like that. Like for example, stable, it remains as it is. It doesn't grow and become bigger. It remains in the same size. It cannot change. But only a living body can grow like that. And once the soul leaves, you can't do anything to that object. Like a tree, for example, a small tree, you water it keeps on growing, bigger and bigger and bigger like that. But once the soul goes out of the tree, and what happens to the tree? It completely dries up. Now, can somebody inject some chemicals and make the tree grow? You cannot. It cannot grow beyond it. Because the soul has left. So the tree completely dries up. This is a beauty. You can easily understand that when soul is present, the matter grows upon the soul. Matter can grow upon the soul. The quantity of matter can go on increasing in the body. A small child can later on become a big fat man, plumpy man. Because the matter can grow upon the soul. But once the soul leaves, the matter cannot grow. This is one thing. Another thing, we can easily understand that when soul is present, there is chetana, or consciousness. Chetana means ability to think, ability to have feelings, ability to will. Like if I pinch this table, he will not feel any pain, because he has no feelings. He is not conscious. Similarly, if this sofa were conscious, he will shout at me, "Hey, why are you sitting on my head?" He'll shout at me. He won't let me sit on him, isn't it? Is there anyone here who will allow me to sit on your head? Maybe you will allow some devotee to sit on your head, but I am not talking of Vaishnavas, I am talking of egoistic, egomaniac, somebody from outside. If somebody tries to sit on his head, what will he do? He will give a big kick on the back. Why are you sitting on the head? But this is allowing me to sit on the head because it has no life, isn't it? So, it's very simple. When Atma is present in the body, there is Chetana, consciousness. Thinking, feeling, willing. All these things are present only when there is consciousness. I'll stop for a while if we can recollect some new devotees came and joined now. Who can recollect for them? Because this is a very important subject what we are discussing today. So you can give only one example. I've given many examples. But how did it begin?
Aeroplane standing alone.
And that I came only recently. Large buses moving back and forth. So I am feeling that, I just want to go home and take rest, Let me just rush through the street. But when reason prevails, then intelligence tells me, no, if you rush now, you will never reach the other side. Better that you wait for 2-3 minutes. So we have that ability to think and feel. Okay, let me wait. But if feeling prevails, then I just cross the road, try to cross the road. Isn't it? I may probably land up or not land up there. So, this ability to think, ability to feel, and ability to will also. Willingness means, no, I won't do. We say, no, I don't want to do. No, that's boring to do. Or I like to do this. I like to do that. That willingness ability is there. Similarly, if you're going in a bullock cart, say bullock cart becomes very tired. Sometimes it collapses on the road, isn't it? Just like the crashing of a computer. Isn't computer crashing? Finished everything. Now the computer doesn't show anything. But the computer is different from the bull. Why? Because sometimes the farmer takes a stick and from backside he tries to cajole the bull to, get up. Although the bull doesn't want to get up, he looks, oh, this fellow wants to get me up. Okay, now if I don't get up, he will trouble me too much. So he uses his intention to get up now. With great trouble he gets up and starts walking again. But a crashed computer will never get all right. No matter whatever you do with that, isn't it? It has no intentionality. So, soul has intentionality. So, he can use his intention. It is one step ahead of willingness. Also, we can find when the Atma is present in a living body, how the living body is different from a dead body. Like Newton's law of motions don't apply for a living body. Like, for example, you take a boy to the 10th story or 20th story building and throw him from the top. So when he falls down, what do you think he will do? Do you think he will just, just fall on the ground directly? He will exercise all possible means to catch hold of some loft or something in midway and save himself, correct? Will a stone ever do that? No. You throw an object from the top, it will just right away fall on the ground. It has no ability to save itself. Even if you tie the boy's hands and legs with ropes, like this, you tie him completely with ropes and you throw him, still there will be a vigor that will be exercised from within in order to, break those, release himself from those ropes and somehow save himself. So where is that vigor coming from? That is coming from the self, from the Atma. So soul is present in the body. If soul were not there, you throw a dead body, nothing will happen. You cut a dead body into pieces, you will not cry. Have you seen? Like if somebody has just now died, after they die, you do anything with the body. They can't perceive anything. There is no thinking, feeling, willing, ability in that dead body. That is why people can perform this, what do you call that? Postmortem, isn't it? Can you perform postmortem in a living man? He will give you postmortem back. He will cut your body, isn't it? He will use all his ability to even kill you. Even according to state laws, if somebody's life is at threat, then one can even kill the other person, isn't it? That much freedom is given. So you will not allow anybody to dissect you when you are living. So, in this way we can understand the ability to think, feel, will are all present only in a living body where the Atma is present. One time, I was watching television. I saw a strange scene. They showed a robot doing some aarti for Balaji. So it was a robot machine, you know, square face, and you know, they had made eyes and mouth and everything. It was perfect, a perfect machine. And it was having an agarbati in the hand. It was clasping agarbati like this and moving it like this. And a bell on the other hand, clang, 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 you know, ringing. Bell is ringing, it was holding. It appeared very attractive. Many people, when they saw that, they were very attracted. They were thinking, oh, now the human beings have become very advanced. They created a human being, another human being. But even an average B.Tech boy can prepare such a robot. It's very simple to make it. All you need is a microprocessor with some servo motors, isn't it, Gaurav Prabhu? If you have some servo motors, he's a B.Tech from IIT Bombay, you can ask him. If you have servo motors for X, Y and Z axis, for rotation and linear translation, and you have a microprocessing device, you can easily make that. So how does that robot differ from a human being or a pujari who is doing aarti? Anybody can say? When a pujari is doing aarti and a robot is doing aarti, ringing the bell, what is the difference?
Feeling,
exactly. When he is doing aarti and ringing the bell, the pujari is having feelings for the Lord. The feelings are lacking in that robot. That lies the major difference between living and dead body. There was one scientist who made a statement in 1992 or 93, I think. He made a statement that by 2000, we will have robots who can marry other human beings. He made a statement like that. We will create robots. I have given in my book also, in the recent book, you can see the statement also he has made. He said that we will create robots and robots will marry one another, and even if human beings want to marry them, they can marry. Because by 2000, we will create robots who are exactly like humans. There is no difference only. They'll be behaving like humans. But now 2000 has gone, or 2003 has come now. It's going to come. Now scientists have realized that it is not fun to make a human being. In fact, you can't make a human being. Because in human being's body, there is an atma, soul. Which by the arrangement of God is present in the body. You cannot simply make a machine. See, a machine can also tell you in the morning, you know, you go into your room, in your computer lab. Good morning, sir. I love you very much. A robot can say like that, can't it? Say. So that you can make a robot say like that, right? Is it difficult? So you can keep something recorded in that, you know. But you know very well, even if he puts up a smile, that is no smile at all. You know very well. So machines behave mechanically. There is no soul in a machine. They can just behave in a mechanical way, in a way that you program them. But they lack emotions. That is why the relationships between human beings, if somebody comes and offers you a rose with feelings, that feeling can never be replaced with even the costliest of the machines created by the modern man, isn't it? So, the most fundamental fact is that Atma, soul, is what gives emotions in a body. Our ability to smile, our ability to become angry or become emotional, these things come from where? Atma. Atma is not present, these things cannot be there. Scientists are thinking at one time that all these emotions which we exhibit, even now many scientists think like that, that emotions we exhibit is simply some electrochemical play. They think like that. It may be true that there are some electrochemicals that secrete at different parts of your body when you become angry, you know, adrenaline secretes, you know, when you become fearful. It may be true. But doesn't mean that simply by the secretion of chemicals, one can exhibit emotions. Emotions actually come because of the presence of the soul. In a dead body, no matter how many acids you inject inside and remove outside, you cannot make a dead body show any emotions. Not possible. Like I'm speaking now, if I talk about any one of you and I praise you, naturally there will be a smile on your face, isn't it? But if you praise a machine, like if I tell the fan, oh my dear fan, you're so nice. In the warm summer, you know, you're giving me nice air. So I write a poem about the fan. Do you think we'll start dancing like this? Or start rotating fastly? You can't do that because there's no emotions. So these emotions are present because of the presence of the soul in the body. So this is a very fundamental thing that we should understand. I am not the body, I am the spirit soul. This is A, B, C of spiritual life. Very, very basic. So without understanding this, one cannot proceed in the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. Now, if you understand I am not the body, I am the soul, and that soul is eternal. In one of my first classes I was speaking about this. that all of us in this world are looking for knowledge. Is it not true? Why do we go to school? Because we want knowledge. We want to expand our knowledge. Why do we read newspapers? Why do we read magazines? Because we want to know more knowledge. What's happening in Japan? What's happening in Australia? What's happening in America? So we are eager to know more knowledge. Similarly, all of us are looking for happiness in this world. How can I become happy? So we always want to avoid suffering and acquire happiness. Similarly, all of us also want to avoid death. We don't want to die at any cost. We want to protect ourselves. So these three qualities I was telling in one of the first classes. Sat, Chit, Ananda. Eternity, knowledge and bliss. These are actually the qualities of Atman, a soul. Atma never dies, is eternal. Atma is full of knowledge and he is full of Ananda, bliss, these three things. And this body in which we are sitting now, this has opposite qualities. What is this body? Asat, it is temporary. And it is Achit, it has no consciousness. It is dead body in which we are sitting. And it is Nirananda, it is full of suffering only. It cannot give us any happiness. Body is a source of suffering. So this Asat, Achit, Nirananda body is now carrying this Sat Chit Ananda soul. Due to this there is incompatibility, incompatible situation. Just like parrot kept in a cage, we all are trapped in this body. So the Atma is trapped in this body now. And what can we do? We are unable to come out. So the Atma residing in this body begins to think, I am this body. There lies the real problem. Can anyone tell me what will happen to us if we think I am this body? Now, at least theoretically, we all know I am not the body, I am the soul. We told so many examples today. But if you think I am this body, what are problems you think could come in your life? Many things could happen. You can tell, think of a few.
You are always in fear. What will happen if you die?
That means you don't want death. You are always fearful. Because you think I am this body. If I die, nobody should kill me. You have the fear. Always fear of death is there. Very good. Anybody else? Any other answers? If you think I am this body, and you don't know about the soul, what all problems can come in your life? Somebody else?
Another being superior to us.
Huh?
We feel that another should not be superior to us.
We always feel, why is he superior to me? Correct. That also comes, comparison, yeah? What else? Anybody else? We have fear of future and we feel insecure. We feel very insecure. Yes, about future, correct. Anybody else? So many problems that come. Let us hear a very interesting, enlivening history from Srimad Bhagavatam, which tells us what will happen if one identifies with the body and what sufferings can come. There is a history of a great king called as Chitraketu. This Chitraketu, he had many, many wives, but he did not have a son. So he was greatly lamenting that I don't have a son. See, in those days, the kings were very worried if they didn't have a son. Do you know why? Because they always wanted their sons to rule next to them. Monarchy was the main thing in those times, not like democracy now. So when one king passed away, his son would rule and then the next son, like that. And the sons would follow the great saintly people. So Chitraketu didn't have a son and he was greatly worrying about that. One day, a great sage Angira came to his court, Angira Sahib, and he could immediately understand that the king's face is full of sorrow. So he asked the king, what is your problem? The king said, my dear great sage, you know very well the heart of everyone, especially conditioned souls like me, people like me. He said, I have all the facilities in the kingdom to enjoy. But what is the use of a beautiful garland for a hungry person? He asked, very good question. If a man is very hungry, the beautiful garland will not satisfy him. Rather, he has to be fed with food. So, Angira understood, I know very well that you don't have a son and that's the cause of your suffering. But Angira also knew that Chitraketu was not destined to have a son. See, there is something called as destiny. You all know what is destiny. According to his destiny, he was not supposed to have a son. So Angira told him, okay, if you are really keen to have a son, then let us perform a sacrifice, yajna. And the fruits of the sacrifice can be given to one of your queens, and then you will have a son. You see, if we are not destined to get something in life, but we hanker for it, if you achieve it, you are going to be miserable. That is what happens. Like somebody gets more than, like, you know, I heard some 2-3 years ago, one boy and girl, they started a dot-com company, you know, husband and wife, very young couple. So in just 1 or 2 years, they got 25 lakhs. So when you get too much money, then what will happen? Then all that money will be misused. Because they didn't have maturity to use that money, they mishandled the money and they committed suicide and things like that. So when something is not destined in our life, but some or other we achieve it, that will not bring us happiness, but that will bring us more and more suffering. So here, Angiramani told him that you are not destined to have a son, don't desire to have a son. But if you really desire to have a son, I'll perform a sacrifice. And then I'll give that fruits to one of your wives and she will have a son. But there is one problem, he said. What is the problem? He said, your son will be the cause of your jubilation and lamentation. Huh? And you have to give him the name Harsha Shoka, he told him. Harsha means joy. Shoka means lamentation, suffering. So he said, you give him the name Harsha Shoka, he'll give you joy and suffering. So king wondered, how can my son give me suffering? After all, I am one of the richest kings and I have everything at my disposal to enjoy. How can he give me suffering? Then he contemplated for a while and he thought, maybe he will become disobedient when he grows up. He may not hear me. That's all right. After all, my desire to have a son will be fulfilled. He said, okay, no problem, he said. Then they conducted the sacrifice. And the fruits of the sacrifice came and it was given to the king. And the king was told, you give it to one of your dearest queens. And he had many, many queens, thousands of queens. And he gave it to one queen named Kritadyuti, whom he loved the most. And after Kritadyuti ate it, very soon she conceived a child. And a beautiful child was born. And King Chitrakuta became very attached to this newly born child. Because when something is given to us in our life after a long time, then we become very attached to it. Actually, everyone works for something in life, and if you get it, you become attached to it. Not only become attached to it, you are always afraid, like she was telling about insecurity. Huh? Once you get something that is very rare to get, you're afraid that nobody should take it away from me. Huh? The fear also comes along with that. So he got the child. He also became attached to the child as well as that queen, Kritadyuti. And all the other queens, they started having a meeting, discussing amongst themselves. What is this? The king never even looks towards us. He started neglecting us. And before the child was born, the king was behaving with everyone equally. Now we don't see him talking to us at all. He always talks about Kritadyuti, he always talks about the child. He always goes to her place and we have become thoroughly neglected. So what is to be done? So they made a plot. Among that discussion, they made a plot that let us kill this child so that once the child is gone, then the king will be free from the attachment of the child and he will be behaving with all of us nicely. So they made a plot and they fed the child with poison. So at that time, Kritadyuti was in the garden. She was roaming in the gardens and she was very restless in mind. She thought, okay, let me bring my son to the garden and he can also be with me in the garden. I can play with him. I mean, keeping him on the lap. Then she sent the nurse, please go inside and fetch the child. Nurse went inside. When she saw the child in the room, the eyes were, you know, upwards. And she took a swab of cotton and inserted it in the nose. And she came to realize the cotton wasn't even moving. And she gave a loud cry. And striking her breast, she fell on the ground, yelling. And hearing the loud noise, queen in the garden, she thought something dangerous has happened. She came rushing to the room. And there she found the servant maid crying and she saw the child dead. And her hair and dress in disarray, she also started rolling on the ground and fell unconscious. In the meantime, the news went to the king. When king heard it, he became blinded with grief. Surrounded by all his ministers and servants, king started fleeing to the spot where the child was dead. It is said, many times when the king was walking, he was stumbling and falling on the ground. Then he would again stand up. Again he would pick up everything and start walking and again he would fall on the ground. In this way, at last he reached the room and he saw the child dead. He just fell on the ground at the feet of the child. And he also started loudly crying. And the queen got up after some time and she saw the condition of the king. And again she looked towards the child and she cursed the will of Providence. She said, "Oh Providence, why are you so cruel? When the father is present in the planet, how can you take away the child? You have no eyes. You have no face to see the things. Why are you so cruel?" Then she looked at the child and told the child, "My dear child, just look at your father. He is so much lamenting and grief for you. Please wake up. Just see your friends. All your friends are eager to play with you. And look at your mother. I'm here. Your mother, I'm ready to feed you milk. Please get up." And she said to herself, "No, no, this child is not going to get up. He has left this planet and gone to a far, far away place. And he will never return back to us," like that she was telling. You have seen sometimes when a person passes away, people lament like this. You have seen that? When somebody goes away. The queen was not educated in the knowledge of the soul. So she was greatly lamenting. And king also got up and king also started lamenting. And this went on and on for hours. At that time, Angira Muni and Narada Muni, both of them arrived there. And Angira saw the plight of the king. And he told the king, "My dear king, what is this? You are grieving like a child. You are so foolish. This son for whom you are grieving now, was he present some years ago with you? He was not with you. Now he was given by God, he has been taken away by God. Then why do you lament? Was you his father some years ago? No. Was he your son some years ago? No. Then why do you lament like this?" Still the king could not assimilate this knowledge, what Angira said. Then Narada, he applied his mystic potency, powers, and then called the soul who had been little far away, leaving the body and going away. He called that soul to come back. And then he offered a prayer. "My dear child, your mother and father are greatly lamenting for you in separation. Please kindly come back and speak to them." Then at once the soul returned back to the body. The soul was shining like sun, thousands of suns. And the soul entered the body, re-entered the body. And the child sat up in his bed and started speaking in a voice, not like a child's voice, but he started speaking in an adult's voice. Child told Narada Muni, "Oh great sage Narada, why did you call me back here? I am a pure soul who was leaving this body and I was going to my next destination. You were saying that my father and mother called me. Which father, which mother are you talking about? Because in my journey in this material world, I have sometimes gone to the world of demigods, devatas, sometimes I have gone to the hellish planets, sometimes I have taken birth amongst the human beings, sometimes amongst vegetables and plants and animals. I have gone through different species. And in every one of the species, I have had so many mothers and fathers. I have had fish mother, fish father, dog mother, dog father, demigod mother, demigod father, demon mother, demon father. I have had all these people. Now which mother, which father are you talking about?" In fact, the soul said, in the ultimate sense, God is the only father of every soul. And that God, he makes an arrangement by which the soul is born in a particular family. He said, just like yata prayanti samyati soto vegena balukah samyujjante viyujjante tata kalena dehinah. He said, sometimes in a river you find some leaves falling and all leaves are floating. Some 4 or 5 leaves come together like this together and they float some distance together and they get separated, never to meet again. They all go to different places. Similarly, different souls are put in one family. One soul is called as the mother, another soul is called the father, another soul is called son, another soul is called daughter. Like that, different souls are put in the same family and they all come together. And because they think they are the body, they think they identify with the bodies and develop attachments. But then they pass some years together and get separated, never to meet again. So he set the example of a gold. Like sometimes the gold and other commodities, when they are sold, like in the marketplace. Like today you have a gold ring, you are very much attached to it. But then you go to the shop and you sell it off or pledge it, Then it is gone, somebody else has purchased it and then goes from there to somebody else like that. It keeps going. So then we can't be attached to something which we do not own, like that. He said, in the same way, I am also a soul, like that gold is going from one pocket to another pocket like that. Myself, I have gone from one place to another place all over the universe. He said, sometimes I have come through the rains, I have entered into the plants, and I have entered into the blood and then into the semen, and I have been injected through the semen of the father into the womb of the mother, and I occupy a body, and then I live in that family for some time, and then I die. Again I go and I take another body. In this way I have been wandering in this universe for millions of years. And in this world, it is not difficult to get a mother or father, because I have got million mothers and million fathers. But it is very difficult to get a guru, spiritual father, who will guide us to the ultimate father, Krishna, God. So he said, so that is something very, very rare. Because in every life, nobody can be born without a mother or father, right? Everyone is born from a mother and father. But to get the real father, guru, who takes us back to God, is the most rarest thing, he said. So the soul said, nobody should foolishly lament for the lost son, because ultimately no one is son, no one is mother, no one is father. All these are simply roles assumed, like in a drama. Like in a drama we assume roles, you know. Somebody becomes a beggar, somebody becomes a king, somebody becomes mother, somebody becomes father. We all have assumed different roles. Like now, I have assumed a male body, I am called a brahmachari. Somebody has assumed a female body, she is called a mataji. Somebody has assumed a child's body, called a child. So these are all superficial coverings. But in the body of each of this, there is Atma sitting, who is one in quality. In the true sense, there is no difference between a male and a female and all these things. The soul is one in quality. So, after the soul explained all these things, then he told to Narada, my dear great sage, please give me permission so that I can go to my next destination. And he said, every soul according to his own karma, good and bad karma, he goes to the next destination. So I am also supposed to go to my next destination, give me your permission, he said. Then Narada gave permission. Then he left the body again and went to the next destination. Seeing this, Chitraketu and all the queens, they were all completely dumbfounded. And they became greatly enlightened. And they realized this body is simply an empty shell in which the real eternal spiritual spark is sitting and driving this body. And that soul is the real personality. And the soul moves from one body to another. They realized this knowledge and they gave up all foolish, false attachments of this world. And they became dhiras. Here Krishna is saying, dhiras tatrana muhyati. Dhira means a self-realized person who knows well the body is material and the soul is spiritual and the soul is different from the body. Then he will not lament. Long ago in our family, myself and my sisters used to cry sometimes, oh, what will happen to us if death comes, you know? Who will die first? I will die first or you will die first? You know, if you die first, I will be crying. If I die first, you will be crying. So we used to think, oh my Lord, why Lord made this death? So we became very curious about what is this death. So we would think, let us all die together so that nobody needs to cry. Later, when we understood the soul, all this lamentation was gone. When my sister ever talks to me on phone, she tells me, she knows spiritual life so much. She's telling me, my dear brother, you are so fortunate. You are sitting in the body of a saintly person now. Born in these good families. Nothing is coincidence in this world. Everything happens only by arrangement of the Lord. So many, many lifetimes you have done many pious activities. You must have given water for the hot season, summer season to the people. You must have built hospitals. You must have made schools. You must have helped poor people. So when you accumulate punya more and more, and one goes to heaven, one enjoys for a long time. And in this way, while going up and down, at one lifetime somebody comes across a devotee of the Lord and then begins to do a little bit of bhakti. And that when the bhakti seed is sowed in the heart, then that starts sprouting and gradually developing. Then one gets interested in knowing more about Atma, more about Krishna, more about what is this world I am living in, what should I do, what should I not do. Somehow or other, intuitively you know, this is wrong, I should not do. Like in my school days, one boy was trying to push me to smoke a cigarette. But I don't know why, but I would never touch a cigarette. I cannot even go near it, when I was a very young boy. So we don't get these abilities to avoid bad things just like that. These things actually come in many lifetimes. So, and then when you grow up like that in your life, gradually, at a particular point of time, you will come across other devotees, devotee friends. Gradually, your devotional service becomes riper, more and more ripe. And you start understanding things, everything becomes clear. There is no ambiguity. Things start, you know, it's like, you know, lights. Just like if this room is pitch dark now, you're not able to see who is where. All of a sudden somebody puts on all the lights, you can clearly see everything. Like that our heart becomes littered up with knowledge. That's why you say, Oma Jnana Timira Andasya Jnana Anjana Shalakaya. When one comes across a spiritual master guru, what happens? Jnana Anjana Shalakaya. He kindles the torchlight of knowledge, and then everything becomes clear for us. I am not this body, I am pure spirit soul. And I am wandering in this world in so many different species. Sometimes in animal body, sometimes in human body, sometimes in demigod's body. I have been wandering like this. And as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Aham Bija Pradaha Pita, he says, I am the seed giving father. So originally this Atma comes from where? Spiritual world. In spiritual world, all of us, just like you see that in that picture, there is a nice picture there. Krishna and Balaram, along with cowherd boys and cows and calves, they are running Yamuna, Yamuna Tiravana Chari, we sing, by the banks of the Yamuna, they are running and enjoying and joking and playing. So this is spiritual world. So we all are like this, as gopas or gopis or cows or whatever role we have in spiritual world, we all are enjoying with Krishna, enjoying with the Lord. That is spiritual world. But when the soul wants to enjoy separate from Krishna, see, we should be ready to enjoy with Krishna. When we want to enjoy like Krishna, then we come down. So we say, why only Krishna? Why not me? I also want to enjoy like him. Okay, then Krishna says, you go to material world, then you enjoy separately. Just like sometimes the mother is cooking in the kitchen, she is so busy with the chores of the kitchen, you know, she has to fetch water, she has to cook food, she has to roll chapati, so many things are there. But a small child may sometimes come into the kitchen and start disturbing the mother, catching her sari. You know, mother, you go outside, I know I want to cook today. I am going to cook everything today. Can a child do something? So the mother gets disturbed by the child. The mother says, okay. She gets a, you know, this toy stove, you know. It has got some electric this thing, I mean. Like some flames also. Yeah, what flames are they? They are not actual flames. They cannot burn the child. But they are like, you know, it looks like a flame, you know. You've seen sometimes they use for Agarbatti also, they use that. Yeah. Isn't it? It has got some imitation flames. So mother gives that toy stove to the child and says, my dear child, you go to the corner, take all these items with you. Yeah, everything, and you cook yourself. Child goes to the corner and he thinks I am cooking. Of course, he can be very happy there, cooking for another 2-3 hours. When he gets hungry in the room, he has to come back to his mother that time. Similarly, when one wants to become like God, like Krishna, then Krishna says, oh, you want to enjoy like me? Okay, go to the material world. That's the world created for you. Then he sends us to this material world. So he says, that is why the Lord picks up the rebellious souls from the spiritual sky and puts them in the material world. That's why he says, Aham Bija Pradaha Pita. That's the meaning of that. Lord is the Bija Pradaha Pita. He is the actual father who picks up all of us from the spiritual world and puts us into this material energy. And then we come through the rains, we enter into the plants, the Atma enters into plants. Then the beautiful spiritual body, like the ones you see there, it becomes completely contracted into a seed form. Tiny seed form, which is 1/10,000th of the tip of the hair. If you take one hair and you take the tip of the hair, it's even smaller. You cut it into 100 pieces, again cut one piece of that into 100 pieces, 10,000 pieces. How tiny it's going to be. So one, the soul is contracted to such a tiny size in this world. It's called as Bija. And that soul comes through the rains and enters into the plants and enters into the human system and enters into every system actually. And then enters into blood, enters into semen, and it is placed in one of the semen particles and impregnated into the mother's womb, as it is explained in the Upanishads. And he occupies the womb, and then the fetus develops over that, and then the child is born. And then he, you know, he is born in a particular family according to his past karma and everything, like this child is saying. So we all are wandering in different bodies like that. So I was telling you a Shastic story, but I would like to conclude with a practical modern case history of one Shukla. Dr. Ian Stevenson from University of West Virginia, he has conducted researches on past life memories. You all know about past life memories? Somebody remembering, have you met anybody remembering past life memory, any of you? I have met a boy personally in Bombay. He comes to Chapari temple, one boy. He told me also where he was born and everything, previous birth. Is there anyone here who remembers previous life, any of you? No. There are people who remember their previous lives. So Dr. Ian Stevenson has researched over 3,000 cases of people remembering their previous lives. Not only in India, but all over the world. I think Austria has the maximum number, I think, of people recollecting their previous lives. So what he exactly does there, he goes to the children and they tell, no, I was this, I was that, and he notes down everything. And he takes the children to that place and checks whether all that they are saying is true. So one case history I would like to relate here today, a case history of a girl called Shukla. This happened very recently, came in the newspapers and all. So this girl, right from her childhood, she used to put a pillow in the cradle and she would be playing the cradle. She said, Meenu, Meenu, go to sleep. No, she would be patting the cradle. So mother was wondering, who is this Meenu? She's always talking of some Meenu. And father said, maybe, you know, she must have heard from her friend some name. But then when she started growing up, her desire for seeing Meenu became very intense. She said, no, I want to meet my daughter Meenu. Then he asked, who is your daughter? Are you crazy? What are you speaking? And she said, no, there is a village called Rattala in the district, Bhatpara district. In that place my daughter is living. I lived before that, she said. Then her father, Sen Gupta, he was once lamenting in his office to his friend, S.C. Pal. He told his friend, you know, I have a daughter who is so crazy. She's just 4 or 5 years old and she claims to have a daughter. I don't know, something mad has happened. Maybe I should take her to some tantric and make her all right. I don't know why she's so crazy. She's speaking, bluffing some things. And his friend said, don't take it as a bluff. There may be some element of truth in what she says. And you told about Rattala. I know very well there is a place called Rattala, he said. Oh, really? Then this girl Shukla said, told her father one day, if you don't take me, then I'll go myself there. I want to meet my daughter and my family members. Then Gupta said, okay, one day let me take you there. So one day the entire family went to that village of Rattala. As soon as she got down from the vehicle, she started guiding them straight to the place where she was living. Although there were many possible turns here and there, left and right side, she didn't turn anywhere. She went straight to the house in which she was living. And outside the house, her earlier father-in-law was standing, Amritlal Chakravarti. She immediately bowed down to him in respect and he was wondering, who is this? And she told all of them that this was my father-in-law, Amritlal Chakravarti. Then she took her inside the house. There were about 30 people in the house and she could locate each and every one of them. She was calling the names. This was my husband, Haridana Chakravarti, she said. And the names when they heard, they were all stuck with wonder how she knows the exact name. And she was showing the two brothers of her husband. They were called as Ketu and Karuna. But this Ketu and Karuna, they were always called as Ketu and Karuna by the neighboring people and everyone. But their actual name was Chetranath. One was Chetranath and Karuna had another actual name. And she even knew those names also. And they were really stuck with wonder. And then she said, we go upstairs and see, I have kept a steel box. I have kept some 4 different color saris. She even told the color of the saris. They went up and checked, all those things are present. At last she met that Meenu. Now Meenu was actually very grown up. She was like, you know, when this girl was 6-7 years old, Meenu was like 16, 17 years old because she was much grown up than her. And she was embracing that big girl and saying, this is my daughter. She started crying. Even Meenu could not relate with her like that. But the small girl could understand everything. So in this way, Ian Stevenson has published over 3,000 cases like that, various proved. Now, in this case of past history, somebody remembering, the presence of the soul is very strongly proved in this example. Because how can somebody who died long ago remember, be born in another place, remember everything if there is no soul? If body is everything, then if body dies, everything, even including the brain, everything is burnt to ashes. Then how can a person be born in another place and remember everything? So when the scientists first time, when they heard this kind of cases, they became little afraid. Do you know why? Because they were afraid that this kind of instances are proving some Hindu philosophy. It's dangerous. Because scientists are afraid whenever religion is proved, scientists become threatened. Because they are against religion. So they were afraid. They were saying, no. See, when some children are saying some things, you know, blabbering something, why do you take it seriously? It's all something in the hidden memory, some cryptomnesia they call it. It's all hidden in the memory. subconscious memory, they are blabbing something, don't take it seriously. Now, what Shukla said is not something from the subconscious memory of this life. But she is talking of something of some previous life, and it is proved practically when we went to the place, all the names are proved. It's not belonging to this particular life. So, even many scientists started wondering, nowadays in internet if you go, you type the word reincarnation, you'll get many, many articles like this. There are hundreds of books now written on reincarnation studies and what is that? There is another one called as hypnotic regression, by which one can come to know the previous life and everything. So, both from the Shastra and from the practical viewpoint of a modern man, we can understand that there is a soul in the body which is different from the body, which is operating this body, moving this body, and time of death it leaves the body and it goes to the next body. As he says, Krishna gives a simple logic here. He says, how to understand that the soul is changing bodies? A very simple logic. The body that you have now is not the same body that you had yesterday, correct? The body you have at T is not the same body that you will have at T plus delta T, even small time. Every moment the body is changing. One scientist paper said, you know, our cells are all completely replaced every 7 years. It keeps changing. Like our child's body has changed to youth body. That means, are we not reincarnating in this life itself? See, we were in a child's body before, and then now we have reincarnated into a youth body. From youth body, we will reincarnate into old body. This is called internal reincarnation, within one lifetime. So, because we are changing one body at every time in this life itself, that means that there is a small change of body like this. You know, I saw recently, scientists have photographed the growth of a plant, how a plant grows and how the flower blossoms, you know. So, in the night the flower is like this and how it blossoms, you know. They had photographed at every instant like that. So, our body also is like that, it is growing at every time. And the Atma is passing, at every point of time the Atma is passing from one stage to another. And at the time of death the body becomes unfit to live. So, what does the Atma do? He sheds it down and then occupies another body, he says. Tata dehantara prati virasatrana muhyati. Talk with another body, my dear Arjun, so do not lament at the time of death, because nobody dies. Body is simply a covering. The body has no life, just like this dead matter. There's no difference between this table and my body. There's no difference. Only difference is I am sitting in the body, so this body is able to move. Like, you know, like now this is able to move. How it's moving? Because the hand is moving it. Without the hand, can this cloth move itself? It cannot. In the same way, inside this hand, there is soul. That soul is moving this body. Otherwise, this body is simply like a flapping piece of flesh, that's all. It has no any sanity, it has no thinking, feeling, willing ability. The soul gives all those, the soul gives life to the body. It's like a gloves. If you put a gloves and move the hand, the gloves can move because of the fingers. Like that, the soul is giving life to this body. So that is the fundamental knowledge Krishna is giving here in the 13th verse. It's one of the most important oft-quoted verses by Prabhupada. Prabhupada would speak on it practically everywhere he goes. So you all can memorize this verse also. We will recite it once again. Dehi nosmin yatha dehe.
Dehi nosmin yatha dehe.
Kaumaram yavanam jara.
Kaumaram yavanam jara.
Tatha dehantara praptir.
Tatha dehantara praptir.
Dhiras tatra na muhyati. As the embodied soul continuously passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. The sober person is not bewildered by such a change. Anybody has any questions or comments?
After realizing that we are the soul, we are not this body, what should be somebody's approach for developing attachment?
Yeah. See, there are two levels in which you all have to work. There are some constitutional duties and there are some conditional duties, we call it. See, our constitutional duty is towards Krishna. Constitution means eternally you are the soul, servant of the Lord. So you have to serve. That is constitutional duty. Conditional duty means when the soul is sitting in a particular body, like now the say soul is sitting in the body of Siddhartha now. And Siddhartha has a wife, he has a mother, he has a father, he has a family. So, these are conditional duties which one has to fulfill also. Like, I am now taking a particular role, so I have to fulfill my duties. So, one has to take care of both. So, but one has to internally know who am I? That's very important. Like now you say you are going to a company, you are working in the computer. So that is a conditional duty you are doing. You have to work, have a job, earn money and run a family and everything. But at the same time you know that although I am working and doing all these activities, this body is a perishable body. And this body is decaying. And one day it will leave. And I have to leave this body and go to another body. So I have to work for that eternal life also. That is my prime duty. So we are aware of that also. So while working for the prime duty, we also take care of the other needs like that. So we should do like that. Anybody else has a question?
No, soul is eternal and this material body is a material body. When soul is present in the material body, then how come this material body goes 6 inches? And how, why this material body goes suffering like, if it feels like, if it feels a hurt, why is that? When soul is eternal, then why this material body feels like sadness is there, suffering is there?
See, the material body is dead as much as the stable is dead. So there is no emotions or feelings in the body itself as per se. If you see, we take the body, per se it has no emotions at all. But if you take the soul is ananda, siddhananda. Soul also cannot suffer, it's always in ananda. The body is anyway dead. So who is feeling? Anybody can answer this question? See, the body is dead. All of you understand this point? The body is dead means it is simply like a vehicle. Like in a car, you are sitting in a car. If you pinch a car, will the car feel pain? No, isn't it? And similarly, you are the driver of this body, Atman. So you also don't feel, you are always in ananda, happiness. And who feels the pain? The pain is felt by the illusioned soul. Illusioned soul means when the soul is attached to the body and thinks, I am this body, then there is suffering. Just like, for example, say if somebody is attached to the car very much, somebody throws a stone in the car and breaks a glass, so how do you feel? Somebody, you know, you put a stone, immediately, you feel a hit in the heart, you know. Because your heart will feel pain depending on the degree to which, you know, you are attached to the car. And then you come to know it is not your car, it is your neighbor's car, how do you feel? No more pain for you, isn't it? Because, you know, you are not attached to the neighbor's car. Neighbor's car, anything can happen to it, at that point, isn't it? So the attachment only causes us the pain, attachment of the soul. So by Krishna consciousness, what happens? We gradually become detached from the body. And you become attached to Krishna more and more. So that is why great devotees, even when there are sufferings in the body, they don't take on the sufferings. Body may suffer a lot. They can go on and on. Like I have seen, you know, one time Prabhupada also, in one place, Prabhupada was very sick, very, very sick at that time. So they had invited him for a Rath Yatra. And Prabhupada went and they were all planning. They had made a very big Vyasasana on the top of the Rath for Prabhupada to sit. So Prabhupada will sit there and he will be just watching and we all will dance and chant and everything. And when Prabhupada came there, he saw the crowd, huge thousands of people. He became so overjoyed, people pulling Jagannath Rath cart in America. And Prabhupada denied, he said, I won't go to the top of the chariot. I want to dance with devotees and chant. So he started singing and leading and dancing with arms raised and devotees are very inspired throughout the Rath Yatra until the end. So great souls, sometimes, even if the body is sick, they have no problem. They can go on and on like that. For a long time. So the attachment to the body reduces, so one can go on for a long time. So we will also get more and more attached to Krishna. Krishna will supply spiritual strength to us. You know? So we can become detached from the body like that. So the body itself doesn't suffer, but the degree to which we are attached to the body suffers. And the body is changing because the soul is present. When the soul is not present, the body cannot change. All these changes can happen. See, yeah, like matter can get shape or form only when it is manipulated by a spirit soul. Like a carpenter can give a shape to the, you know, table. Similarly, the body also gets a shape and form because the Atma is present inside. Atma has form. Like you see all the covered boys have form, covered girls have form, you know. This is only Atma has form. But when he comes to the world, he gets covered over with the body, which also occupies form because the soul has form like that. And the body keeps on changing because it's the nature of the law of the material world. So the body has to grow and deteriorate and causes suffering. Actually, the suffering is not inflicted by God. This suffering is invited by our own rebellious nature. See, we have only put ourselves in trouble. Like somebody may say, why is God so cruel? That he sent, you know, drove me out of the spiritual world, he sent me to the material world, and here I have to suffer all these consequences. No, we cannot blame him. We are exactly like a son or a child, you know, who took off his finger from the parents and wants to go in the middle of the street alone. In between, you know, lorries come and trucks come and the buses are coming. So whose problem is that? It's our problem. We didn't want the care of the parents. We wanted to be independent. So we have invited the suffering. Now what we should do? We should tell the father, oh my dear father, I am suffering in this world. Please give me your shelter again. Again you pick me up. Give me your hands. So you pick me up from this world. There is a nice voice by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Hai nanda tanuja kinkaram patitam maam vishame bhavam budau kripaya tava pada pankaja stita duli sadrisham vichintaya.
He is saying, oh my dear Lord,
Ayi nanda tanuja kinkaram,
oh my dear Krishna, who is son of Nanda Maharaj.
Patitam maam vishame bhavam budau,
I have fallen into this ocean of material existence and wandering here and there. Kripaya
tava pada pankaja.
Sthita. Sthita means place me in your lotus feet as one of the millions of atoms at your feet. That means accept me as one of your devotees and keep me with you. He's praying. So by this prayer we can, and we're chanting Hare Krishna, we can go back to the feet of God again. And there's no more suffering again. So once you begin spiritual life, then that is the beginning of end of your suffering. I can say that's the beginning of end of your suffering. That means suffering has already started ending little by little, and it will completely come to a complete end.
So this
Jitta is heading from a dead body. And can't the dead body become eternal? No. Like, no, soul is not heading in a dead body. In dead body there is no soul.
No, no. Like this is the dead, this is the chemical body.
Yeah.
This is the metal body.
Yeah.
The dead
yeah, correct.
Dead
body. Yeah.
And soul is heading.
So your question is, why not we just keep on living in this body forever, isn't it?
Yeah.
Why should it die at one point?
When the soul is eternal, why is the body set?
The Lord has made such laws in this material world that the soul can reside in this body only for a short period of time and he will be threatened by death. See, Satchidananda is the nature of the soul and the matter has opposite qualities. The matter has a nature to decay and dwindle. Anything you keep matter, it always decays. You've seen that?
Yeah.
Like you buy a new book, it's very attractive. And gradually what happens? So matter has nature dwindle and die. So when it is fresh, like a flower also, you see, it blossoms beautifully. And then gradually it dries up like that. You know? And then it becomes dry and falls. So Lord has made arrangement that the soul can be in contact with body for some time. And the body dries, then you will be given a new body like that. The nature of the body is always deteriorate. It cannot be fresh always. That's the nature of the material body. Matter means to deteriorate always. You know, sometimes in a lathe machine, you know, you turn a very fresh, what is the rod? My steel rod, you know. Turn, it looks so shining and nicely finished everything. You just throw that rod in one corner of the workshop. Come out one week and see. That's it. That's nature of material world. It's always go down like that. The body is going to deteriorate. So when it becomes unfit, just like a cloth becomes unfit, you throw it, you'll be shedding that verse later. Then we wear a new cloth, like that. Keep on changing body. But devotees of God will not have to keep on changing body like that. They don't take bodies at all. Once they become pure devotees, they leave this complex mesh of cycle of birth and death and they can return back to God. Anybody else? Those who don't have a question, I would request you to make one statement what you remembered in the class today. Either you ask a question or you have to recollect one or two statements that you really cherished and you remember, you are going to take it home and you are going to apply it in your life. Something. Each of you please. I'll give the mic. You can give the mic, Siddharth. With that we'll end the class.